Go Loud.
Give them your phone, but they're like, why is it a Nokia 3310 with one number on it that says Mammy? Snake.
And when you ring Mammy, it goes directly to the department for first.
Yeah. I remember a teacher saying, did you not think that they were robbers? So I thought they were builders. I didn't think I'd be coming into this episode mansplaining, but here I am with my story about foreign aid. And you're like, yeah, I worked as an aid person. Oh, go away, will you? Let me have my moment.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to A Few Scoops, a comedy news podcast with me, author, journalist, documentary maker, and someone who wore standing up jeans to a sitting down studio recording. Calm, you can't see this, but I have fully unbuttoned and unzipped my jeans because they are too tight. And my co-host, whose jeans are fully on at all times, it's Colm O'Regan.
We've workshopped a number of different intros there, and I don't remember that on the shortlist on the whiteboard. But anyway, yeah, I'm also in the writing game. And I just got physical copies of my next book, which is out on October the 30th, Gallivanting with Words. It's not about the stuff we do in this podcast. It's just like, I need a break from that too.
Yeah. This week, a new domestic violence register will be introduced in Ireland, and not before time. An old-timey crime as the Louvre is robbed at 9 o'clock in the morning. Israel breaks the ceasefire in Gaza as soon as they had the bodies returned from October 7th. Amazon Web Services are down, and loads of people couldn't message them each other on Snapchat. And Colm has good news about the end of aid. There is one story that you might notice is missing from the roundup. And this week we will have a special bonus episode this Thursday where we discuss the presidential race. Voting takes place on October the 24th, which is Friday. So we will be discussing the current Irish presidential race and our favourite moments from previous Irish presidents. This week, the Irish Cabinet will study legislation brought forward by the Justice Minister, Jim O'Callaghan, and the law is named in honour of Jennifer Poe. I did work on Jenny's story this year after I met her brother, Jason. So Jenny was 24 years old and had two children when she was murdered by her ex-partner, Gavin Murphy. Gavin told Jenny that he had been previously living in Spain. It turned out that he had actually been in Mountjoy prison and had previous convictions for assaulting his former partner and had a history of abusive behaviour. Jenny wasn't aware of this, and then Gavin Murphy murdered her. Her brother Jason, who is also a teacher, and just like, I can't believe the strength that he has considering everything that's happened, but he has been calling and campaigning for years now that there should be a domestic violence register in Ireland. There is one already in the UK called Clare's Law, again named after a woman who was murdered by her partner who had a violent history. So Jason has been campaigning for years now to get Jenny's law implemented, and Jim O'Callaghan, the Justice Minister, who also used to be a barrister, has been supportive of this, although there has been some delays, but Cabinet will study the legislation brought forward on Tuesday, and it is very likely that they will all agree on it and then it will go to the Dáil to be voted on. The Department of Justice said this will help people who are in a relationship or considering a relationship with a person to discover whether they have a history of serious domestic violence convictions. Under the legislation, a trial judge will have the discretion to issue a judgment in the appropriate case and contain details of conviction and sentence, as well as any other information relevant to the offence that the judge deems appropriate. This means that they will be put on a register, like the sex offenders register, and it will be able to access for women who want to access it. There had been some concerns about privacy, and my retort to that would be, don't beat women, and then you'll have nothing to worry about.
And then, was there concerns about the victims? So is it up to the victim if they get added
to the register? No, it's decided by a judge.
So can a victim say, don't add him or her to the register, it puts me at risk?
I think you could probably mention in a victim impact statement, you'll often see sometimes victims saying, especially if there's mental health issues involved, they'll say, I don't think prison's the right thing. However, I don't think it will be left up to... You could make the case to the judge, and judges do take victim impact statements into consideration, as they should do. I've been into a lot of court cases, and it's actually quite heartening when you're there. I think TV makes judges seem like these kind of stern old men with no feelings. And actually, I have found the opposite working in courts, that a lot of judges, not all of them, a lot of judges are very empathetic. They do seem to have a lot of care and attention for the victim.
And the reason for this, is this because like you couldn't have Googled them because maybe the case they were involved in...
Didn't make it to the papers.
Didn't make it to the papers.
Jenny had no idea that Gavin Murphy had domestic violence convictions, and he lied to her, and the people around him lied to Jenny. And even if she had Googled it, it wouldn't have come up. I know it's horrific, but it is very good news. Anything that makes women and men and all people safer when it comes to domestic violence, this will not help the scourge of domestic violence that blights our country, but it definitely is a step in the right direction. So fair play to Jim O'Callaghan.
But also it puts it on a par with sex offenders as well in terms of opprobrium and society's attitude to them, you know.
Yeah.
The domestic part of domestic violence is often seen, you know, there's a perception.
Yeah.
It seems to reduce the impact.
And we know that people who have been physically abused in childhood or previous relationships are more likely for that to happen again, because the type of people who abuse their partners seek out vulnerable people and people with low self-confidence and people they think they're easy to manipulate. So hopefully this goes away to keeping some people safer until we actually decide as a country to act on domestic violence, which we're not really doing. Okay, now we are travelling to France in what I consider a very old-timey crime. The Louvre, the famous gallery and museum in Paris, was robbed this week. French officials say they now have 60 investigators working on the theory that the raid was planned and executed by an organised crime gang. So this, I think, is the Frenchest thing I've ever heard. The thieves arrived at 9:30 in the morning. They weren't staying up late at night.
Yeah.
They weren't getting up at 7 o'clock. They weren't getting up at 7 o'clock in the morning. They arrived at the Louvre.
They were aged 52, only 2 months away from retirement.
They arrived at 9:30 in the morning, shortly after the museum was already open to the public, and they used a furniture hoist, which is a big crane thing.
Yeah, cherry picker.
Yeah, a furniture hoist to get access to the Apollo Gallery, home to the Royal Collection, and they had cutting equipment to get in through a window and open the display cases. A brief clip of the raid was filmed on the phone of a visitor.
I'm not sure you'll use your phone in the Louvre. That's that's an offence right there.
The masked robbers stole 9 19th century items of jewellery, one of which was the crown of the Empress Eugenie, and they dropped and broke it as they ran away. This is like...
we have dropped the crown.
It only took 7 minutes, and the 8 items of jewellery that were stolen have been labelled as priceless. Does that mean they're just too lazy to put a number on it?
It's... You know, witnesses have described the gang as one Silver Fox elder coordinator, one young computer hacky guy, one van driver, one hot lady.
So it gets worse with every sentence. One official said, this isn't me saying this, this is him saying this. The raid was thought to have been carried out by an experienced team, possibly foreigners.
What is your conclusion, Inspector Clouseau? They were foreigners.
Did you watch Lupin on Netflix?
I did.
About that very hot...
That's right.
...detective. Was he the detective or was he the art thief?
He was the thief. And
yeah, he was the very hot art thief.
He was sort of Idris Elba lookalike. Yes. Kind of Francis Idris Elba. And lots of improbable disguises, wasn't there? And just general polo necks and long coats.
Yeah, a lot of jiggery. Elan. A lot of jiggery pokery. But yeah, the Louvre has been robbed as of Tuesday morning. They have not arrested anyone. But I have to say, you know, obviously they've broken a lot of stuff and it did belong to the royal family and we should protect and preserve our history. But this is funny, whatever, which way you square it.
Yeah, I do think that old crowns are the dullest of all museum objects.
The one that they dropped. Oh no, is this the one they dropped? Can you say this? A diadem?
Diadem? I've never said the word.
Yeah.
So it just hasn't come up in conversation in Inchicore.
So I think a diadem is a crown.
Yeah.
So the one of the diadems that they stole had nearly 2,000 diamonds. A necklace that once belonged to Marie Amiel, the last queen of France. It has 8 sapphires, 631 diamonds, according to the Louvre's website.
So that's if there's a surge in wedding proposals.
Because 631 men with new diamonds.
Exactly. I struggle to feel bad about. Obviously, it's you know, crime is bad and all. But it just
depends who you ask.
Yeah, I did see on one website, I think it's Newstump, saying the jewels have been found in the British Museum. Based on past history, Elgin marbles and other friezes see elsewhere. But it is nice to have. There was a time when these stories were like the crime story of the day.
Yeah, you know, you'd hear of like paintings being stolen. Yeah. The Ra used to steal a good bit of art back in the day.
They don't know much about art, but they know what they like to steal. Yeah, in the words of.
They don't know what it is when they know it when they see it.
Yeah, and is it in the General? I think Brendan Gleeson playing Martin Cahill says, "I don't know much about art, but I know what I like to steal."
Mm.
And that felt. And then of course he ruined it by crucifying somebody on a pool table. So you know, people, like, why don't you stick to art stealing?
People do truly contain multitudes.
Yes, yeah, people are complex. But anyway, it will lead to a surge in people mispronouncing
diadem
and the Louvre.
The Louvre.
As well. Louvre, I think, is how you want to say it.
Have you been to the Louvre?
I have. I've been to see the Mona Lisa. It's incredibly small and disappointing. Yeah. There's too many people around.
Yeah. I brought my mom to Paris the start of last year and we took her to the Louvre. And, like, she likes what she likes. Same as Martin Cahill, my ma. She likes what she likes. Took her down to see the Mona Lisa and in the most Craigan mammy accent ever, she just looked at it and went, "Is that that?" It is very small. She has no eyebrows. A fashionista.
Yeah.
Mona Lisa, I mean, my mom has eyebrows.
Yeah.
But
no, she has them now.
She has them now. Yeah. But yeah, so basically, from what I have read, the Louvre is undergoing renovations.
Mm.
So that's why when the cherry picker showed up, they were like, "Oh, it's the equivalent of putting on a high-vis vest and sneaking on the EP."
Yeah, I mean, I do feel some sympathy for them because as a 9-year-old in primary school, being kept inside because I had a cough. Remember the days when your mother's diktat could reach to the school and say, "Call it to be kept inside." And I was kept inside and a load of lads robbed the school and they weren't even wearing high-vis. They just had a certain air of, I thought that there were no refurbishments going on at the time, but I thought they'd suddenly started with 4 of them coming in the door. And then the next thing they were seeing coming out the window of the staff room with handbags.
Yeah.
And I remember a teacher saying, "Did you not think that they were robbers? I thought they were builders." And this is before the Celtic Tiger, when there were far less builders around.
Yeah, they were a rarity.
Yeah, this was in the 80s. Something should have triggered for me. Nobody's building now.
Anyway, it has the heist. We never have heists anywhere. The heist has reignited a row over the lack of security in France's museum, which are far less secure than banks and increasingly targeted by thieves. Last month, Paris's Natural History Museum was also robbed. Gold samples. I have no idea what that means, but gold samples worth $700,000 were stolen, along with 2 dishes and a vase, with losses estimated at 7.6 million. They must have got those dishes from Dunn's.
Yeah. The Paul Costello collection.
What
are you using that for? You're not allowed to use that.
There comes any chance of a Dunn's store sponsor.
Yeah, it's from the Louvre.
Despite a ceasefire being agreed upon on the 10th of October, Israel has begun or continued a spate of attacks across Gaza. The bodies of 57 Palestinians were taken to hospital across Gaza on Monday. It began around the notion of what the Israelis are calling a yellow line. The yellow line covers 53% of Gaza, where Israeli forces are stationed. Palestinian people have tried to cross the yellow line to visit family or try and see if their homes are still standing, and they have been shot and killed by Israeli forces. The issue is, you can't avoid the yellow line because it's not visible. It is something that Israel made up. Some Gazans didn't even know there was one, and now Israeli forces, after they have shot and killed multiple people, are now putting up signs to identify where the yellow line is, as well as warning Palestinians not to cross it. 11 members of one family were killed on Friday evening when they were fired on by Israeli forces and unknowingly crossed the yellow line. And the family is called the Abu Shaban family. So that's 11 members of one family.
On a made-up line.
On a made-up line. Meanwhile, in the West Bank, Israeli settlers set fire to three tents owned by Palestinians. The tents were unoccupied when they were set alight, although the settlers did not check. A total of 986 aid trucks have entered Gaza out of 6,600 that were supposed to have arrived by Monday. This has been noted and labelled as humanitarian blackmail by the Gaza government media office. They said that we note the average number of trucks entering the Gaza Strip daily since the ceasefire does not exceed 89 trucks out of 600 that are supposed to enter. This is a continued policy of strangulation, starvation and humanitarian blackmail practiced by the Israeli occupation. Under the ceasefire deal, Israel was supposed to allow aid into Gaza. So while this is happening, Donald Trump has visited Israel and spoke at the Knesset. He said that Hamas is going to behave or will face severe repercussions. They're going to be nice, and if they're not, we're going to go and we're going to eradicate them. This came after a wave of deadly airstrikes on Sunday. All aid cut off until further notice. And this is because Israel said there was a reported attack by Hamas. Trump said Hamas have been very violent and they don't have the backing of Iran anymore. They don't really have the backing of anyone anymore. They're going to be good. Last thing that I'm going to mention is that at least 135 mutilated bodies of Palestinians have been returned by Israel to Gaza, and they'd been held in a notorious detention center, which was already facing allegations of torture and unlawful deaths in custody.
And it's bad enough that the Israelis have an investigation against their own prison.
Like, yeah, how bad does it
have to be? Yeah, that has to be pretty bad. Also telling that they didn't really attempt to hide in any way people's nooses or handcuffs. They really know that it's absolutely fine. Also, it's start of olive picking season in the West Bank, and farmers are being attacked. The pressure to get to a ceasefire, you know, say the world protesting, it's hard for the energy to get back up to maintain, but it's just as important in the post-ceasefire as during the height of attacks, because this is where sneaky deaths happen.
And a lot of academics, a lot of Middle Eastern academics did say once Israel gets the bodies back from the hostages that were killed on October 7th, they would start again. We cannot trust Israel as an arbiter of truth. They have lied multiple times. They have bombed the negotiators in the peace negotiations. And it was warned that you cannot trust them. The only person keeping Netanyahu from raising the rest of Gaza to the ground is Donald Trump. And Donald Trump, as we know, doesn't have that big an attention span. And this is the longest he's concentrated on anything since he took up a big campaign against Kirsten Stewart from Twilight.
What's that?
Have you not heard about this?
No.
Donald Trump hates Kristen Stewart from Twilight.
Okay.
And then kept tweeting about the fact that she cheated on Robert Pattinson.
Oh, with the director, is it?
Yeah. And he was like tweeting.
I mean, that was pretty low. So
he was tweeting at Robert Pattinson, but like, you're too good for her.
Yeah.
I can't believe
which
you don't remember.
Which iteration of his beefs with Hollywood actresses is this? Is this recent?
No, this is a while back, because she's a lesbian now. Well, I mean, she's probably born a lesbian, but she...
We're not qualified. I'm not qualified to comment.
Yeah.
All right, that was quite the lurch.
So anyway, in foreign policy, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has met with Donald Trump's special envoy, Steve Witkoff, and his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, in Israel. They are talking about developments and updates in the region. No Palestinians were invited. And
Steve Witkoff is the real estate developer, isn't he?
He is. Yeah.
Real estate developer. And is he also the US negotiator in Moscow with Putin. I get mixed up between all of Trump's idiots.
In April 2025, Witkoff met with Putin in Moscow. Witkoff did not bring his own interpreter to the meetings and relied on Kremlin-provided translator. The decision was noted as a departure from standard diplomatic protocol. It was noted that the language is never the same when only using host country interpreters.
So yes, he didn't have an American one. The Kremlin-provided interpreter. Like, I'm wondering, did she say, I tell you what, Steve, why don't you just give me your phone and I'll type it into Google Translate.
Yeah.
Like, that's entirely possible.
Do you know, I was actually invited to interview, a lot of journalists were invited to interview the Israeli ambassador in Dublin under the auspice that we all had a hand over our phone at the reception in the embassy.
Okay.
So, yeah, into a needless large. To say, I did not attend.
Just give them your phone, but they're like, why is it a Nokia 3310 with one number on it that says Mammy? Snake.
And when you ring Mammy, it goes directly to the Department of Foreign Affairs. Yeah.
But anyway, just there's always good crack with Trump's employees. The most recent one, his pick for... Sorry, I'll just search this now at the moment. What's his name? So if you Google Trump pick Nazi...
Is this Big Balls?
No. Big Balls isn't in the... He's in the tiny balls place compared to this. A leaked group chat between Republicans has revealed shockingly racist and hateful messages from Donald Trump's already embattled nominee to lead the Office of Special Counsel. So this is the guy investigating and supporting whistleblowers.
Yeah.
His name is Paul Ingrassia. Sent messages that included racial slurs, an admission that he has a Nazi streak, and a claim that Martin Luther King Jr. Day should be tossed into the seventh circle of hell. So I'm sure stuff will come out about this because it's about 2 gigabytes of leaked chat messages, but a giant Young Republicans chat group.
Oh, I have heard about this, yeah.
Which is full of I love
can
Nazis.
Can I just say also Young Republicans goes up to the age of, I think, like 38 or 39. So like a lot of them are adults.
Yeah, it's good that they're inclusive in that way.
Mm.
You're only as young as the Young Republican you feel. But anyway, this giant trove of messages containing some of the worst, just I'm a Nazi stuff.
Yeah, there was something about gas chambers. There's a lot of like anti-Semitic, real like, what do you call that? Like,
it's edgelord.
Edgelord is the word I was looking for. Yeah,
aren't we hilarious saying things you can't say anymore?
Yeah, there was a lot of like edgelord. I'm not even going to say humor because it's like just hate speech, but a lot of like, you know, gas chambers and Nazi references. And then one of them was pictured with an actual swastika in the background of his office.
Yeah, but that wasn't even hidden in the chat. That was him just at a meeting on Zoom. Anyway, so this guy, he's currently trying to get a job to lead the Office of Special Counsel, despite admitting he has a Nazi streak, which actually should qualify
and
him.
And speaking of our neighbours across the pond, 7 million people turned out to protest Donald Trump over the weekend in what has become known as the No Kings protest. Most of them went off quite peacefully. And it was, they reckon, the largest ever demonstration, public demonstration in American history. 7 million people, more than the entire population of Ireland.
And isn't there some stat that I vaguely remember that in order for anything to change in a country, you kind of need 3% of the population to be protesting?
Okay.
It's some sort of, is it heuristic, like rule of thumb number that for pressure to feel like it's a movement. So 7 million is about 2% of the American population. Yeah, so they're close. I mean, whether it makes a difference in this version of
king,
America when there is a king there. But I think, was there 500,000 in Ireland protested against the Gulf War in the early 2000s, which was pretty good.
Mm.
Now, what did we do off the back of it? We still let them land in Shannon.
Yeah, if only you could have channeled some of that energy against the British Army when then they were north. But anyway, we'll move on.
We had a much smaller population then and the roads weren't as good. The weather was bad.
Okay, next up we have a tech story that I don't really understand. So I am going to be offering up Calm specialty for this. But Amazon Web Services were down yesterday for almost 9 hours. Popular streaming platforms and messaging service and banking were offline due to an outage in Amazon's crucial cloud network. So things like Snapchat, which I'm way too old for, Duolingo, loads of different. I know someone who, one of my friends, who basically couldn't work because her work intranet was hosted by Amazon Web Services. Amazon said at the time mitigations to resolve launch failures were progressing and linking a load balancer health issue to connectivity troubles. So things like Amazon's Prime Video service, Disney Plus, AI, Fortnite, Airbnb, mobile phone services, messaging apps like Signal, Ticketmaster in Ireland, all these were down. Later then they said it was resolved. So as someone who doesn't know anything about tech, the only way I can describe it is Amazon Web Services provide data storage and digital services to other companies and like governments and individuals. So disruptions to their server can cause mass outages for different websites. So explain this to me, right? So Amazon Web Services own the, like, they own the platform that your website would be on. They host your website.
They host your website. Okay. And like everybody's got a website hosted somewhere.
Yeah, so the
and
other ones are like Google and Microsoft Cloud Services.
And smaller ones that are so small that they're not really competitors. But you might have your website hosted with a hosting company who might have their own space somewhere. But they may also have bought stuff
from
Amazon because they can operate at scale. They can put in giant data centers that, you know, you need the power, you need the space, you need the physical machinery.
That hurt our
And all that stuff has been consolidated into one. It's like there's only a couple of cables crossing the Atlantic which contain all the internet. You know? So there's lots of, or not enough points of failure. Now, there are people online saying that a year and a bit ago, a lot of senior engineers left Amazon, a lot of experience left Amazon as they were cutting costs. So the fact that it broke is a thing that happens. What's surprising is how long it took to fix. And so they reckon, and by they, I mean people online.
Like former engineers.
Former engineers saying that it took longer to find out what the problem was than would be reasonably expected.
Because people are leaving.
People have left in the last year. So an engineer called Justin Garrison at the end of 2023 left Amazon Web Services and basically roasted them on the way out the door. He stated that AWS had seen an increase in large scale events and predicted significant outages in 2024. So he was out by a year.
Okay. But now, so it's like the way the headline read was basically there's a brain drain going on, and as more, this happened with X, formerly known as Twitter, when you try and cut costs and you start laying off important people, you're going to have more technology problems.
Yeah, that's entirely possible. Now, I'm sure they'll say, no, we've plenty. The big thing is we're fucked. We have so many things dependent on so few people. And when the competitors are gone, they can make it as good or as shit as they want because you have nobody else to go to.
This is why we should be doing more to break up big companies and ensure competition.
Yeah, get out into the countryside and use Semaphore. That's flags. That's flag communication for anybody listening.
Colm, do you want to hit us with your good news this week?
Sure. So, simple good news. I swam down the deep end of a swimming pool for the first time in the last couple of weeks.
Can you not swim?
Yeah, well, I could swim in as long as I could touch the ground, which rules out a lot of water. And so I got lessons over the last while. And so last Sunday was the first time me and the girls, because they can swim better than I can.
Good.
So I just didn't want them to have to save me. It's so embarrassing. Yeah. So we were all hanging around on the deep end of the pool.
Wow.
After 47 years, you would think. It's never too late.
Do you mind me asking why you can't swim?
Well, there's no particular reason. There's no like...
Did you not learn at school?
No. No, there was no school lessons, or there was eight of them. And there's about three pools in Ireland. You know, like it's one of the, you ever watch?
We got free swimming, one thing about the Brits, we got free swimming lessons.
You do swimming well.
Yeah,
like there's more swimming pools now, but for ages, like you'd be reading Deutsch Heute, your German school textbook, going, they have a swimming pool. How come they have such easy access to a swimming pool?
We got taken to the council pool, and the woman who taught me to swim in the local council pool had been there so long, she also taught my ma.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say she was formerly in the RA or something.
Well, we don't know.
Yeah. There's always, I thought like, and this is a good one. She was one of the main Good Friday negotiators. No.
It is, Derry.
But yeah, so it's never too late. But it's great. It's great swimming. Have you tried it, listeners? Water.
It's a cool new thing.
What a magical molecule. And then the overall, the big, fuzzy, complicated good news off the back of bad news is when America cut US aid, which...
When Elon Musk cut
yes, USAID. Doge and all of that. So it used to cost about $40 billion, which is less than they spent bailing out Argentinian Prime Minister Javier Milei, is that right? And it was part of the General Department of Government Efficiency Doge cuts, which apparently haven't saved any money and may have cost more because they had to hire everybody back.
Killed people in Africa.
Yes. As well as that, But one of the side effects of aid being cut off is that aid had been problematic anyway in terms of it was inefficient.
It can stymie productivity and create other issues in the country it's been given.
Yeah, if you come in with loads of dollars in aid, you hire all the best people to work on your project, mm-hmm. and your project is often a vanity project. Mm-hmm. And like to give an example, this is quoting from The End of Aid by Amy Rose and Elizabeth Isaacson, who were two journalists who were at this kind of, oh my God, what do we do? The aid's been cut off think tank. And Brendan Carr of Mount Sinai Hospital said, stop funding hospitals when you do aid. Hospitals are big, shiny projects that donors love, but that disproportionately treat diseases that are complex or rare, not the ones killing people everywhere.
And also, so vaccines, if your country gets a lot of aid, there mightn't be the best transport links to big cities where the hospital would
exactly,
be built.
Exactly, yeah. Vaccines save the most lives, followed by maternal health, followed by training people who can prescribe drugs or do basic medical work. Not overpaid doctors, but hygienists, wound care specialists and nurses. Like, the stuff that kills people is cuts that go off or dirty water.
I worked actually in foreign aid a long time ago when I left university and I lived in Malawi. And a lot of the concentration was like, when we had ideas for stuff to do, they were like, if you start this, you can only ensure it'll work for 6 months, and we need to have things that are sustainable for the village, because I was in like a very small, very poor village. A lot of the best stuff that we'd done long term was just, we built loads of toilets for girls to go to school.
Yeah, it's, toilets save lives.
Yeah.
Toilets and light bulbs, dull stuff. It's not marquee, there's no ribbon cutting, you know, for a toilet at the edge of a village.
Yeah.
And so, you know, aid has created dependency and it props up corrupt governments, and stuff just will go when the people are gone, and it's subject to the whims and all of that. It's a bad thing, cutting aid just like that. You shouldn't do that.
No.
But one of the things that comes out of crisis is different thinking, speeds it up, and there might be some good news in the way in which things are funded, like the stuff you're talking about, microfinancing. What was Malawi? What was that part of?
Well, we were funded, I think. I got a letter from David Cameron when he was Prime Minister thanking me for all my hard work, me working for the British government.
Yeah.
Now, it was one of those like semi-state things, and I worked for a human trafficking charity called People Serving Girls at Risk. So Malawi, because we're on a tangent now, but Malawi has one main road that goes through it.
I've been to Malawi too, actually.
And takes you into Mozambique. And there's a lot of long-haul truck drivers.
That's
and stuff,
right,
and there's quite a lot of trafficking of young girls. And we would go into schools and explain, you know, if a man comes to your village and offers your daughter a job and says he has a job for your daughter, do not put her in daycare or a truck and let her go. That sort of stuff. And then obviously we did a lot of work with people who had HIV.
Very good.
So, dug a lot of holes, gained a lot of weight.
Latrines. You spoke the language of latrines for a while.
I must have been the only person. I went to Malawi and gained weight because we didn't have a working fridge.
Yeah.
So I had to eat pasta every day.
Well, my aunt was a nun and I visited her in Ethiopia and Malawi, and we definitely gained weight out there because they ate well. I didn't think I'd be coming into this episode mansplaining, but here I am with my story about foreign aid, and you're like, yeah, I worked as an aid person. Oh, go away, will you? Let me have my moment.
I'm queen of the wokes, Colm. You should have known.
Is there any experience you haven't had? If I come in with a story about welding, will you actually say, actually, yeah, built a bridge across the foil. I'm a riveter.
We already have three loops. And more good news is that we are going to give it a go with a second episode of A Few Scoops that you will have in your ears on Thursday morning. These will be shorter episodes where we will go more in depth into a certain subject that may or may not be in the news that week. So listen out for that on Thursday, and we hope to see you soon. Do you have anything you'd like to add, Colm, this week? Are you doing anything this weekend? Voting?
Oh, yes. Yes, I'm voting. Voting for Jim Gavin. We need to show. We need to show
those women.
Yeah. Oh, I'm gigging with Deirdre O'Kane on Friday night.
Oh, I love her. Do you know her family from Derry?
I don't.
Mm-hmm.
That's the 24th. Down to Cork to plant acorns and flowers.
So sweet.
Acorns. I love acorns. They're so like, oh, you know, could be an oak tree over the weekend. And then,
do you know who else is named after oak trees?
Derry. Okay. The London oak tree.
Oh, shut up.
Oh, just a quick shout out as well too. I'll be down at the Kilkenomics Festival in Kilkenny, November 7th till 10th. Sounds like a thing you'd love. Just a lot of people sitting around talking about economics, Aoife.
Yeah, it'd be way over my head.
Oh, believe me, it's my head is so. I've learned to tread water, as we've discussed earlier, in terms of swimming.
Yeah.
So it's just about not panicking and not waving your arms around too much. It's comedians interviewing or moderating panels with economists and people who know stuff about stuff. And we ask questions. Hopefully they're stupid, but then with complicated answers.
Has anyone ever considered, you know, asking why people insist on trickle-down economics when it's proven not to work? And also, what about taxing billionaires?
It has come up. Yeah, we said it's fine, though.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, this weekend I will be doing a lot of media. I think I'm booked in for a couple of radio shows on Saturday morning. And then I will be at the Coin Centre.
Oh, yeah.
On Saturday in the RDS to see some woman elected.
Mm.
We know one thing, and it'll be a lady.
Yeah.
Okay, thank you.